It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Since Iowa's Century Farm Program began in 1976, 18,330 families have been recognized. The program identifies farms that have been in one family for 100 years or more. The challenge of keeping a hold of those farms grows with each passing generation. The new Iowa Public Television documentary, Iowa's Century Farms, tells the stories of six century farms in Iowa and the families who've been a part of the land for so long. The documentary premieres on Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on Iowa Public Television. Disclosure, IPTV is an underwriter of Iowa Public Radio. With me today is Laurel Bauer-Bergmeier. She is the producer and director of the documentary. Hello, Laurel.
For having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today and coming back to the show. And I want to ask you, before we include some of the farmers that are a part of the documentary in this conversation, where was the idea? Where did that come from for you to look into these century farms?
It's kind of an idea that Iowa Public Television kicked around for a while. We just thought it was something important to talk about. We know that a lot of people, as you mentioned earlier, have been awarded the Century Farm Program, and it was something that has just been kind of talked about at Iowa Public Television, and we just decided to go for it in the winter.
It seems like such a romantic idea to think about a farm being part of one family for 100 years or more, and at least one of the farms that you profile in the documentary is actually a heritage farm. That means 150 years
right
in the same family. Did you have that kind of romantic notion going into it? I know that you're very familiar with farmers, so maybe,
right.
Maybe you didn't have that romantic notion.
No, I definitely did, because I come from a farm family. I'm married to a farmer today. But to know that something has been in a family for, 100 years, and in the case you just mentioned, over 150 years, there's a romantic view of that. And you wonder, how can that be possible? How can it stay in a family for that long? My family, on my father's side, has a century farm, and on my mom's side, we have a ways to go. So it is a neat story.
Absolutely. Well, and the stories are not simple. Every family, of course, has its own story, but you think of all those generations and all of that time, a lot happens in 100 years.
Exactly. And I think that's the things that I discovered about the documentary, was the hard work that it takes to keep a family on the land, and the dedication and the communication that it takes to do that. You're exactly right, a lot of hard work.
I want to bring Gene Weiss into the conversation. He's a farmer who lives and works on a century farm in Carroll County. Hello, Gene.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, it's nice to be here on a pretty day.
Well, it's pretty. It's pretty cold, too.
Right, it is.
So, Gene, tell us a little bit about your farm.
Well, our family has been on this particular farm since 1902, which was settled by my grandfather, who was born north of us about 20 miles, and remembers when this was kind of open grazing country in the late 1800s. But he thought he'd like to someday farm in the Manning area, and he elected to do that and brought his family here in 1902. And so the farm has been in a continuous family ownership since then. And we, with this being recognized as a century farm, we finally realize how unique it is and how nice it is to be involved in that program of transition. But from there, it progressed to my father and then to my brother and me. And now Mrs. Jean and I have a son and daughter in the business, and Dave, our son, has three sons, and everybody seems to be interested in the land.
Wow.
And, of course, what it can do for us in sustaining our cattle herd and our operation. So we really respect it very, very much and cherish it and treasure it.
Now, you are in the Hereford cattle business. Has it always been a cattle farm?
Not always. The first Hereford cattle that were brought in here were brought in 1912. My grandfather did that, of course, and And then it progressed from there, and then my brother and I showed a great interest in the breeding of cattle, and so it's kind of progressed from that time. So actually, we got more involved in the late 1940s, early 50s, and then progressed from there.
Now, in the documentary, there are some amazing pictures from your family's history with the cattle. And I wonder, in the process of working with Laurel on this documentary, what was it like to pull open those boxes and start looking through those old pictures?
Well, it was a lot of fun because we don't do it as much as we probably should. And it caught the interest of our grandsons, too, that we were bringing back a little history. But it also challenges them to try to continue to improve and do a little better job with the land, which is so important for us. And environmental stewardship is a key, one of the keys to our operation. And so we try to be very, very careful how we handle the land. And as my grandfather used to say, under all us lies the land, and meaning all people. And we kind of really abide by that.
Gene, I'm sure you know a lot of farmers. Do you think that the fact that you have a century farm and that your family has farmed this land for many generations and will continue to farm it for at least a couple more generations, does that change your perspective about environmental stewardship?
Well, I think it's it doesn't, because we believe in it very, very, very strongly. And I see in the transition that's taken place in my lifetime, today's farmer, which is there are fewer of us, but today's farmer is well informed and understands the importance of land. Now, I know we're producing fence row corn and soybeans, and we're applying lots of fertilizer, but soil conservation is a factor that's entered into the picture very highly, and thanks to the Soil Conservation Service for their dedication for this. But without taking care of the land, it's someday going to fail. And so it's very important, I think, that we continue to do so, and even more so improve as we go.
I want to bring Roy Bardol into the conversation. He is also he's a fourth-generation farmer in Greene County on a century farm. Hello, Roy.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Roy, as I mentioned, you're fourth generation. Two of your sons, Peter and Tim, also farm with you. They're fifth-generation farmers on the same land. Tell me a little bit about your operation.
We are fortunate to be able to farm not only my century farm, but my wife's family's century farm. My farm was bought in 1901 by my great-granddad. Phyllis's century farm was bought in 1903. My great-granddad was a little bit of a scoundrel, the story goes. I, of course, didn't know him. But he bought and sold and bought and sold. He was a horse trader, among other things. And when he bought what I call the Home 160, his wife Eliza told him that we're going to live here now. We're not going to move anymore. And he come home one day and told his wife that he sold the corner 5 acres off to one of his drinking buddies. And his wife informed him in no uncertain terms that that was unacceptable and that he would spend the next 2 weeks on the Davenport. I don't know. Like I say, I wasn't there, but that's the story that has come down through history. All of my family have been very, very conscious of the importance of the soil. When it comes to me, I say It's all about soil. Without the soil, we have nothing. We changed to no-till farming a little over 20 years ago. We believe very, very strongly in it. We believe that it enhances the productivity and that catchword of today's sustainability of a farming operation. As a family, we have sat down and done the exercise of writing a vision mission statement for the operation and discussed those things that are terribly important. You know, when you have a father and two sons and looking forward towards giving the operation, and I put giving in quotes, to the next generation, with two sons, there's going to be some conflict. That's just the way life is. And to have some things written down that those sons can look at and reflect on of the importance that they have identified in what it takes to get along and farm together and maintain a farming operation.
We're going to talk about those challenges a lot more this hour. I want to know, before we get to the break, quickly, Roy, was this always a given for you? Did you know you'd be a farmer?
I knew I'd be a farmer, I think, as soon as I could walk. I really, really do not like chickens. When I was just starting to walk, there was a big bad rooster that lived in the hen house. And the hen house was between me and the tractors. And that old rooster used to chase this little boy when he would try to get from the house yard to the machinery. That's left a indelible impression on my life. And we do not have any chickens, and we will not have any chickens.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking today with Roy Bardol, Gene Weiss. They are both farmers who live and work on Century Farms in Iowa. Laurel Bauer-Bergmeier is also here. She's the producer and director of the documentary Iowa's Century Farms, which premieres on Iowa Public Television on Tuesday evening at 7. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Century Farms, farms that have been in one family for 100 years or more. A new documentary from Iowa Public Television, Iowa's Century Farms, tells the stories of six century farms in Iowa and the families who have been a part of the Iowa land for so many generations. The documentary premieres Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on Iowa Public Television. With me this hour are two of the farmers who are profiled in the documentary, Gene Weiss of Carroll County and Roy Bardol of Greene County. Laurel Bauer-Bergmeier is also here. She is the producer and director of the documentary. And we're going to continue to talk about Century Farms, the challenges of keeping a farm in the family. And Gene and Roy will share their stories. But we also want to hear your stories. Are you connected with a Century Farm? Tell us about your family's history and the challenges. Maybe you've had to say goodbye to a Century Farm. We'd love to hear your story. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to the phones for a moment. Ken is on the line. Hello, Ken.
Yes.
Hi, Ken. And you also have a family farm that is a Century Farm, right?
Yes. It's been in our family for over 140 years.
Wow. And where is your farm?
It's in Salix, Iowa, which is just south of Sioux City on the Missouri River.
Are you involved in the operation still?
No, I'm not. It's the three brothers. We still own it. My one brother operates it and does the farming.
Part of the major challenge for families in keeping farms in the family for generations, of course, you need to have somebody who wants to farm it in the next generation, and you need to have a farm that can actually sustain the number of people who want to be a part of it. Ken, when the family turned over to your generation, or the farm turned over to your generation, were there any big challenges that you faced?
Well, we all moved off the farm except my older brother, and he's still self-sustained. It's about 450 acres, and because he rents quite a bit also. But all our kids are all have different interests, and that is a problem you're talking about. But when my father died, he said he wanted to be sure to keep it in the family, and we're going to do that. When we have to get a job off the farm, which is not enough acreage there to sustain.
Right. So there's a plan for the next generation, even though none of the kids want to farm?
There is no plan. Mm. That's the problem, because everybody's off with their college degrees, their PhDs, off doing their thing, and the Peace Corps, and finance, the whole works. One thing I want to say is that my family is a French family that settled from Canada after the Civil War. And they bought it from the railway company. The government then gave land along the rivers to build railways. So they gave land to the railway companies, who in turn sold it to farmers to pay to build the railway. And what land was left over, they just sold it to farmers, settlers. This was 1868, 69. The interesting thing is, I remember my grandfather, we called him Pepe. He was born on that farm. He never spoke a word of English. It was always French. It's a French community up there. Probably the last of the French communities. In fact, I don't think anybody speaks French anymore up there. My father died here a couple of years ago at 96, and he was the last French-speaking person in town.
Wow. So much heritage there, Ken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thanks, Sherry.
There are so many people with stories like Ken's who face an uncertain future, and I want to play just a little bit from the documentary, Laurel. This is from a farmer who you featured. He's not part of our conversation today, but this is Harold Hill. And he's talking about how his family probably will not continue to farm his land because he has three daughters, but only one who's interested, and the finances just aren't lining up right. Here he is.
It's been a struggle. We have three daughters. Two of whom are married and living away, and it's not likely that they or their husbands would want to come back here. The younger daughter has an interest in the farm, but I'm not sure there would be, if we were to rent the farm to her or even try to sell it, that there would be enough income for her as well as for us. My thought is probably at this point, we will probably try to rent this to a younger neighbor who wants to get involved in farming and try to be of help in some way that way. That's part of our American system, and sometimes businesses stay in a family, and at some point they're probably going to come to a close, and that may be the case here. It may still be owned by the family for a period of time, but it may not be operated by somebody in the family.
That's Harold Hill from the documentary Iowa Century Farms. And Laurel, in profiling these six different families and these six different farms, I'm sure you talked a lot about the future. What did you hear from people about the challenges of continuing this?
Well, just as Harold mentioned, it kind of depends on how many kids you have. If you have kids who are interested in farming, and some aren't. As he mentioned, two of his daughters, they married and they live out of state. This farming operation just won't sustain retirement for Harold and his wife, Carol, and their daughter to farm at the same time. But there are many challenges that all these families faced. Most of them that I profiled are examples that they've been able to have a successful farming succession within their family. And so they were able to work through some of those different things if kids wanted to come back. Both Jean and Roy are examples of that they have been able to make that work.
Absolutely. Well, and Jean, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you have been able to make it work? I asked Roy earlier if he always knew he was going to be a farmer. How about you?
Well, I always knew what I wanted to do, too. But the discussion you've just had in the continuation of farms, and we're seeing less and less families continuing, but in my opinion, And I have to, and I'm glad to, give an awful lot of credit to the mothers that have produced the children that have continued with farming or were able to continue to farming or had the great desire to continue to farm, because they somehow appreciated what their husbands or their families were going through, and they valued it as a family unit, and I think encouraged children to look at it the same way. So the women of agriculture have played a big, big role in the continuation of family farms and the traditions therein.
Well, and of course, there was a time when we just assumed when there were sons who were born into the family that one or more of them would be farmers. I mean, Roy, was that an assumption when you were a kid that one of you would pick up the farm and continue?
I think it was an assumption on my part. My folks really didn't say, you know, I don't think that was a huge issue for them. And possibly because from the time I could speak, all I could talk about was that I'm going to farm someday. And all of my spare time was spent out with Dad, working and learning and doing. Now, when I graduated from high school, Dad said, "You're going to college, Roy. You get 4 years of college, and then we'll talk about you coming back to the farm." It was important to Dad that I had experience beyond the farm, and if anything, it made me more certain that farming is truly what I wanted to do. I've been fortunate that with all of my boys, I have always included them in the operation, and really all three of my sons would have liked to have come back to the farm. My youngest is 10 years younger than my oldest, and there simply was not enough income for him to come back to the farm. As I look forward, I believe that is going to be the greatest challenge for continuing farming operations, and that's enough income not only to satisfy husband but to satisfy wife.
When you took over the farm, Roy, was it challenging for you and your family to make sure that the income could stretch?
Well, I came back to the farm in 65. Life was a lot different then. The house that Phyllis and I lived in, I fired with a wood furnace, so I didn't have to heat the house. Income or expenses, living expenses were so much less. Dad still had chickens, so we had our own eggs. We had our own chicken for chicken meat. We had beef and pork. We killed for our own meat on the table. We had big gardens, so our expenses, living expenses, were way different than they are today. And our expectations of disposable income were different than it is for young folks today. Young folks today are no different than they were when I come back. I want to start out where I left off with Dad as far as standard of living. Well, kids want to start off today where their folks left off in standard of living. Takes more money to do that.
We've been talking about succession as well, and of course part of the challenge is that there has to be a child, obviously not still a child, but a child of the farmer who is ready to take over, ready to shoulder the responsibility, has the skills. There has to be enough income. There also has to be an older generation that is willing to make room, and then there's a point at which inheritance comes into play, because of course you want to be fair to all of your kids, but sometimes that makes it really, really hard to keep the farm. And that was a real challenge for your family, wasn't it, Roy?
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, the way Dad's, Mom and Dad's estate was set up, there's five of us kids, and everybody was to have a fifth, one-fifth of the estate. Well, for the operation to remain viable, that meant I had to somehow make arrangements with the other four-fifths. That's very, very financially intensive.
So he split the inheritance equally among all five of you, but you were the one who was staying on the farm.
And I am the one that had stayed on the farm from the time I graduated from college until my folks passed away. So, yes, I did. I contributed to Mom and Dad's estate through my lifetime's work. You'll find that a universal statement among the heirs that stay on a farming operation. Well, you can say, well, your folks did absolutely what was right. Fair is fair, equals equal. Well, what about the part that I contributed to the folks' estate? Well, you know, it's I understand both sides.
Right.
I truly do. I understand both sides, and I truly am not throwing stones at my siblings. I love every one of them. And my siblings and I, as far as I know anyway, still have a very, very good, close family relationship. But this estate handling can be a very, very divisive kind of a situation.
Well, and Laurel, yeah. in making the documentary, you encountered a number of different people who said that, you know, families can get along great until it's time to talk about inheritance. It can really tear families apart and you can lose the farm.
Right. Yeah, that was something all of us discussed, that it can be very divisive. And I've known families, you know, just in my own community that that don't speak to one another anymore because of inheritance or farming succession plans that maybe just they felt weren't fair, or they just weren't what they agreed with. And that's what I realized with so many of the families that I worked with on this documentary, that it's not that they didn't face challenges or they didn't have things to work through, but the communication was so good among these families. They really talked about how they were going to do things, how they were going to continue in the future, and how different generations could be a part of that.
Gene, how has that worked out in your family?
Well, it's an issue that's facing all of agricultural families, and I listened carefully to what Roy was saying, and I think it just can't be equal today with the cost of agriculture and the involvement of the amount of money it takes to operate and the risk that's encountered, that it's pretty hard to be equal when you distribute it. But you know, I look at it that anybody that is the heir of a farm is a pretty lucky person today. And we've seen these escalated land prices to where it's presenting somewhat of a problem, not only in that regard, but to the cost of operating a farm. So I go back to the fact that I don't think it can be distributed equally. We have two daughters and one son. Our son has three sons that want to enter the business. Well, how do we do that? And so we've got to adjust for it, and our kids, that son and those two daughters, are going to have to understand how we're trying to work it out as fairly as we can and yet continue with the farming operation.
It seems like so many families have equal and opposite challenges, where some families don't have somebody who wants to take over the farm. Some families have too many people who want to take over the farm and not enough farm for them to take over. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to talk more about Iowa's Century Farms. With me this hour, farmers Roy Bardol and Gene Weiss. They both live and work on Century Farms. Roy in Greene County and Gene in Carroll County. Laurel Bauer Bergmeier is also here. She's the producer and director of the new documentary Iowa's Century Farms, which premieres on Iowa Public Television Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
School, let's go. Now
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Century Farms in Iowa. The new documentary from Iowa Public Television, Iowa's Century Farms, tells the stories of six century farms in Iowa and the families that have lived and worked on those farms for generations. The documentary premieres on Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on Iowa Public Television. With me this hour, Laurel Bauer-Bergmeier. She's the producer and director of the documentary. Gene Weiss is a farmer who lives and works on a century farm in Carroll County. And Roy Bardol is a fourth-generation farmer in Gene County. And before the break, we were talking about some of the financial challenges of passing farms along. And, of course, when we think about history in Iowa, the Century Farm Program started in 1976. That's when we started recognizing the farms that had been in families for 100 years. And that was before the farm crisis of the 1980s. And I want to play another moment from the documentary. And this is Roy Bardol, talking about how during the farm crisis, the bank said they were going to start foreclosure on his family's farm.
During that farm crisis, when it felt like I had lent great-granddad and granddad and dad down by, I won't say mismanaging, because it wasn't mismanagement, but circumstances and so on. It's terrible hard. Terrible, terrible hard. Emotionally, physically hard. Tim was still home. Jason was a little boy when the bank told us that they were going to start foreclosure procedures on us. I come home and stepped in the door and started to crying. Jason and Tim, I don't think, probably ever saw me cry. I'm not sure they've seen me cry since. The generational farms, the land itself, there are few things outside of my family and my faith. I would say there's nothing outside of those two things that are any more important than the generational farms.
Roy Bardol in a moment from the documentary. And Roy, it must be difficult to revisit such a painful time, but I was really struck by what you said and feeling that obviously you were scared about losing the farm. You were worried about letting down your family that was with you, your sons and your wife, but you also felt like you were failing your father and your grandfather. I mean, the weight of this responsibility must be pretty heavy sometimes.
Well, I have to admit there are tears in my eyes. That was truly, truly gut-wrenching, that period of time. And I don't know as far as great-granddad, granddad, dad, none of them would have thought less of me if I'd have lost the farm, but I would have. And I suppose, as most challenges are, they are self-imposed and self-inflicted. But during that time, that burden felt very, very heavy.
How did you weather that?
Faith and family. I had all the support in the world of Dad. I had been blessed with parents that many folks, I'm sure, are blessed with parents of like quality, but I view mine, as everyone else does, as very, very special people. I never had a stronger supporter than Mom and Dad, outside of my wife and my children. And their trust in me was absolutely, positively vital for surviving that period of time and coming out on the other side whole.
We're talking this hour about Iowa's Century Farms, and you are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Janice is on the line in Van Meter. Hi, Janice.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, we are actually building a house on the Century Farm of my husband's family. We will be the fifth generation to farm it. And what I'm curious about is, we talk about the financial and the turnover and all of that. What is especially Laurel's thoughts on forming a corporation or an LLC or something like that? My husband's other side of his family, on his mother's side, more distantly, has that kind of a shelter over their farm. And they actually have a business meeting once a year. And it seems to work really well, because then there's a little bit less of some of the emotions, and it becomes a business that's being passed on from generation to generation. I guess, what are the thoughts on that?
All right. Thanks for calling, Janice. And Laurel, I know that this isn't your expertise,
right,
but you did interview a number of people who have this expertise.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts?
Well, there are two specialists in the program that do talk a little bit about that. And they will be in the studio on Tuesday night. And those are things that I think she brings up a good point about business. It is a family operation, but I think if they look at it, at least these two agricultural specialists really talked about, if they look at it as a business, that's very beneficial to families, because it does take a lot of the emotion out of it. And that's hard to do, but they talked a lot about ways that families can do that, and that when they have business meetings, don't do it around the holiday time. Try to, because that just brings into the emotion. But they do talk a lot about that. And I think she brings up a great point about the business, that helps with the transition.
Well, and I'm also hearing, and we've talked about this on many programs in the past as well, that having a plan in place for inheritance well before it becomes a crisis seems to be something that's key. And we have another moment from the documentary. This is one of your experts. This is farm consultant Melissa O'Rourke talking about what makes a Century Farm work.
You know, as we go up and down Main Street throughout Iowa, throughout farm country in America, there are other kinds of family businesses out there. But if there's been a family plumbing business or a shoe store or an apartment building owned by a family for over 100 years, they don't get a sign that says Century Plumbing Business or the Century Family Apartment Building, because it's a different kind of business. Farming, as we know, is not just a business, it's a way of life, it's a lifestyle. It's working land, raising livestock, producing food for the world. And for multiple generations of families to have been involved in that over 100 years and more, there has to have been good relationships, good communication, goal setting, and just a legacy in that family of saying, this is what we're about. This is what we do, and we do it now, we've done it in the past, and we see our family doing that in the future.
That's farm consultant Melissa O'Rourke from the documentary Iowa's Century Farms. Let's go back to the phones. Bobby is on the line in Ames. Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, we have a situation in our family where my dad raised three girls. And none of us, nor our husbands, are going to be going back and taking over the family farm. But, I mean, that's pretty gut-wrenching, because he made it through the 80s, and he's built up the farm to a very profitable business and a nice legacy. And we all wanted to see that continue. And I wanted to share what we did as a family to see that continue, because there are alternatives to seeing your livelihood pieced out at a farm auction. My dad went and interviewed young people from colleges who wanted to go back and farm but didn't have a family farm to go back to. And he ended up finding a good match, hired him as a laborer for 5 to 6 years, I think. And now this gentleman will be the one to take over our family farm. And my sisters and I and our families will just be a sounding board for him, a kind of a board of directors, after my dad is gone, so he doesn't feel like he's doing it all alone. But it's a great opportunity to help these young people get started in farming, because as we all know, it's really hard to get started in farming if you don't have a land base or the farm assets in your family. And so it's a great way to help them get started and then make sure that the farm family legacy continues.
And Bobby, so in your family, it became the land that was the focus. That became the most important piece of the puzzle, not the fact that the family would continue with the land, but that the land would remain intact and would continue to be a farm?
Yeah, I mean, we looked at outside people and brought them into our business, and I think making sure that the business continues and thrives. My sisters and I are still involved, but much more distantly, kind of like as a board of directors type role. And then Dad's business partner will take over the farm eventually as Dad passes and make sure that it continues. And we kind of operate it under the same principles that Dad has all of these years. So our focus was making sure that Dad's legacy continued, rather than worrying about who within our family is going to make that happen. We looked at outside of our family to make that happen.
All right, Bobby, thank you so much for sharing your story. I know that's an experience a lot of families are dealing with right now. And Laurel, in the documentary, you mentioned that in 2012, over half the farmland in Iowa was owned by people over the age of 65. There are a lot of transitions that are coming toward farm families.
Definitely. And that's one of the key reasons why we wanted to do this documentary, was because that is a startling statistic. And I just wanted to say that caller, I don't remember her name, but she brings up a great point. There were several families that I spoke to, I didn't profile them, but that were going outside the family to bring in a young farmer because it is so difficult. And Iowa State University does a lot of work with families. And so she brings up a great point. But yeah, that's exactly why we wanted to do this documentary, because it's something that every farm family's facing.
And that's a complete... It's a documentary in and of itself.
Exactly.
Maybe that's next year or the
year
after. Yeah,
that's right.
This is an email from Cindy in Ames, and this is a question you may not have much perspective on, but I'd love to hear from both you, Jean, and Roy on this. She says, has any objective research been done about whether most century farms get better land stewardship than most non-century farms in terms of soil protection, clean water, and wildlife habitat? And one of the farmers that you profiled shared a quote that, you know, it's a saying that a lot of people know: live as though you're going to die tomorrow, farm as though you're going to farm forever. Mm-hmm. Jean, do you feel like among people who live and work on century farms that there's a stronger land ethic?
That's a good question, and we dwell on that a little bit. The people we talk to that are diversified a little bit in agriculture are pretty darn good environmentalists and stewardships of the land, I think. And we like to think about that, too, because wildlife and all of the things that encompass good agriculture is at hand here, and we need to continue to do it. Now, we've watched with the heavy applications of nitrogen and other fertilizers, and the fence row farming has kind of diminished somewhat the population of, for instance, as an example, our pheasants. However, you know, people say the deer population is increasing mightily, so there's things to be considered both ways. But to live in Iowa, to take advantage of all of the things we can enjoy with wildlife and all of the geese and ducks and all the beautiful birds that are here, we don't want to destroy that in any way. Most farmers that I know are encouraging it. They're very much interested to see it happen.
And Roy, can you weigh in on that too?
I can't say that I've seen any research that century farms are more environmentally conscious than others, but it would stand to reason that it would be true. If you are a Century Farm and you hope that your farm will stay in the family, your farm has to be profitable. And part of the way that you see that it is sustainably profitable is that you see to the health of the assets you have, and the asset that you have is the soil. Charity, could I make one comment on
sure.
the when my granddad started farming, 160 acres was a very adequate sized farming operation. Today, if an individual, single individual, doesn't have 1,000 acres, he's questionably financially viable. He's doing many things besides farming.
Right.
As some of these farm operations are looking at how to continue themselves, perhaps they need to look at some other Century Farms that are too small, that have individuals there that are interested in maintaining and continuing that heritage, and looking not only towards the individual that is just graduating from college, but look at those who have proven themselves on a current Century Farm and need that increased capacity so that they remain economically viable and can maintain their own heritage in their own Century Farm.
Roy, you're a man of vision. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, it's been a pleasure.
Roy Bardol is a fourth-generation farmer in Greene County. He farms with his sons, Peter and Tim, near Rippey, along with his wife, Phyllis. Gene, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome. Nice to be with you.
Gene Weiss is a farmer who lives and works on a Century Farm in Carroll County. Weiss and Sons, it's been in the family since 1902. And Laurel Bauer-Bergmeier, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Laurel Bauer-Bergmeier is the producer and director of the new documentary, Iowa's Century Farms. It premieres Tuesday evening on Iowa Public Television at 7 p.m. You can see pictures from both Gene's and Roy's families and their farms on our website, iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.